In Unitarian Universalist congregations, we bring ourselves, as we are, into community to learn more fully the gifts and challenges of being human. Together, we seek to build the beloved community. We search for truth and meaning, and we each bring our own unique perspective. On our journey, we draw on all the sources of wisdom that the world has to offer. We are inspired by others who have walked these paths before us. We find companions for the journey, and we gather courage to walk boldly into an unknown future. As we gather, we look for the worth and dignity in every person. We know that we are part of a web of connection that expands beyond our imagination, and we strive as best as we know how to manifest our deepest values to bring more love and justice into our world. On our journey here, we welcome all of whatever race or class, whatever sexual orientation, whatever gender identity, whatever religious background or physical ability. All who would welcome and be part of that welcome are encouraged to join us on our journey. If you are worshiping with us for the first time this morning, a special welcome to you. I invite you to join us for refreshment and conversation in Gore Hall across the patio after the service. I want to acknowledge the presence in our sanctuary this morning of some of the members of the group that are protesting outside our sanctuary. For those of you who are visiting and not part of that group, I just wanted you to know that they are in here. The people that you can know that are part of this congregation have their name tags on and are wearing bright yellow standing on the side of love shirts. Be one of the ways that you can identify members of this congregation if you're interested in being in conversation with them. This time, I'd like you in your most loving way to turn and say good morning to one another. Our opening words come from the Reverend Margaret Kipe. As surely as we belong to the universe, we belong together. We join here to transcend the isolated self, to reconnect, to know ourselves, to be at home here on Earth, under the stars, linked with each other. I've asked that our children go straight to play this morning, so we won't have words for all ages, but I would invite us to sing the song of dedication in their absence. I invite you now to settle more fully into our time of worship together, to prepare for a time of meditation and reflection. Take a moment to bring yourself fully to this time and this place. Relax your body. Calm your mind. Breathe. Karen Anderson preached the Sunday morning worship service at our General Assembly in Charlotte last month. Reverend Anderson is the co-minister of First Unitarian Church in Rochester, New York. I offer some of her words for your meditation and reflection this morning. She said, "As we here at First Unitarian in Rochester have grown fond of provocatively telling our newcomers, quote, Unitarian Universalism does not care one whit whether you are an atheist or a theist, an agnostic, a Buddhist, a pagan, or a Barnes and Nobleite. Our question for you is whether your atheism, theism, paganism, Buddhism, Barnes and Noblism leads you to connection, leads you to listen to your deepest self, to be open to life's gifts and serve needs greater than your own. In other words, do your beliefs help you to connect to life, to self, and to others. If your beliefs serve this higher purpose of connection, then they're in. And if they don't, and we really mean this, they're out. End quote. And so the question is this: do your beliefs help you connect to self, life, and others? Let us be together in shared silence. My remarks this morning come in the form of three reflections separated by musical interludes to give you time for reflection of your own. We come together to worship and to learn for community and to make a difference in the world. We do that each Sunday here in Orlando, in Orange County, in Central Florida. We do that each Sunday and at other times throughout the week. We do this because we are better together. We are stronger together. We are more compassionate together. We are more fully called to our best selves when we are connected. But as wonderful as it is here together, there's a whole world out there beyond these walls, and we are part of that as well. And our connections to that world are important too. And we build those connections in many ways. Sometimes we build them with the interfaith community. Like last year when a number of us joined in a September 11th celebration of peace at Lake Eola. It was organized by Christ Church Unity, and they welcomed us in our bright yellow t-shirts with our bright yellow banner that said, "Standing on the Side of Love." That was the day where there were threats of burning the Quran in Gainesville, and we were prepared to go that day to witness on behalf of our Muslim brothers and sisters of their right to the practice of their free religion. Christ Unity Church will hold another celebration of peace this year on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. They've invited me to be one of their speakers, and we expect our Tuesday night band to perform as well. There are so many opportunities for us to reach out to our neighbors in the interfaith community for cooperation and support. Sometimes we build connection with non-religious groups in the community. There are certainly many groups that do work that is keeping with our values. Last Wednesday, I attended a briefing for progressive leaders here in Orlando in advance of this week's conference going on in the city. The group hosting the conference, who is outside of our sanctuary this morning, is unabashedly anti-choice, anti-gay, and anti-Muslim, and they have made it clear that they will disrupt our community during their visit here. I went to the meeting because I wanted to make sure that I was connected to the conversation about how we can keep our friends and neighbors safe. I wanted to be sure that I was connected to the conversation that considers how we make sure people know that this outside group does not represent the good people of Orlando and that Orlando does not abide hate and bullying. Amen. There are many opportunities. There are many opportunities for cooperation and connection, and we need to be part of them. In addition to these local connections, we can also connect to the Unitarian Universalists around our state and around the world. I was recently privileged to gather with over 4,000 Unitarian Universalists in Charlotte, North Carolina. 26 other members of our community were there. Anybody want to say you were there? Yeah. This annual gathering of Unitarian Universalists has happened in each of the 50 years since 1961. 1961 is the year of consolidation between two previously existing groups, the Unitarian Association of America and the Universalist Church of America, both with deep roots in our country. How many people have ever been to General Assembly? Cool. How many people have been to over 10? Uh-huh. Over 20? I don't see Roger this morning. I think he's got even more than 30. General Assembly, often referred to as GA, is 4.5 days filled with wonderful worship, learning, workshops, social witness, and the business of the association. It's full of opportunities to reconnect with old friends and to make new ones. It's full of opportunities to connect with our larger movement and to be inspired, to be reassured and encouraged, to be shaken out of our complacency and challenged to live our faith more boldly in the world. Next year, General Assembly will be held in Phoenix, Arizona. There had been talk of not going because some people wanted to join the economic boycott called in response to the hateful anti-immigration legislation enacted there. Last year, after much deep reflection and conversation, GA delegates decided that we would hold our General Assembly in Phoenix in 2012, but we would not do business as usual. We would have a social justice General Assembly during which we would spend less time in the convention center and more time in the community. We would partner with organizations in Arizona doing justice work so that our presence would help the people of Arizona and would send us home better prepared to engage in the challenges of immigration reform in our own communities. You'll be hearing a lot about Arizona this year. We'll be preparing for this ambitious work, and I hope you will consider being part of it, both the preparation and, if possible, the event itself. There's a lot to learn about Arizona, about immigration, about language and culture. But perhaps the most important thing we can learn is how to make responsible and respectful community connections. How we connect matters. It would be irresponsible for a bunch of outsiders, no matter how well-intentioned, to descend on Phoenix and cause a lot of hoopla and leave. Not only would this lack integrity, it could very well undermine the work and circumstances of the very people we would be hoping to serve. There are people who work every day, who live every day with the challenges of being an immigrant, documented or otherwise, in Arizona. For me to arrive there and presume that I know what is best for them is at best hubris. That is why we form partnerships, so that while we seek to serve, we are also hoping to learn. This is what we need to do when we seek to understand the immigration issues here in Florida, a different kind of border state. We need to check our assumptions, and we need to be accountable to the people who live and work with immigration issues every day. Those of us in the dominant culture, and most people in this room have at least a toe in the dominant culture, will need to ask a lot of questions and listen very carefully. We will need to consider the privilege and power that we take for granted because of things like our gender or our sexual orientation, our socioeconomic status, race, ethnicity, or immigration status. Many of us have some experience with being the outsider in some way. I've had my moments. However, I have to acknowledge that being an educated, upper-middle-class, native-born Euro-American married to a man, I have a different perspective than, say, a poor, gay, undocumented Latin immigrant. No matter how great our wishes for the fulfillment of the American dream, to ignore differentials in power and privilege is naive at best, and, dare I say it, could even be considered immoral. Immigration as a moral issue is the name of the study action issue which Unitarian Universalists are now engaging. Together, Unitarian Universalists across the country are studying, sharing resources, and taking actions. As people of faith, as people of goodwill and high aspirations, it is imperative that we understand what some have called the civil rights issue of our day. We do not have to agree on everything. I'm pretty sure we won't. In fact, I think it's very likely that we will bring many different perspectives to our understanding of what to do about the complex and unwieldy system that today regulates entrance into this country. However, this system has a direct impact on how we are in relationship with each other, as well as how we are in relationship with our neighbors, both locally and around the world. How we are in relationship is a deeply important spiritual question. Before we continue, whether you presently know a lot or a little about the immigration issues facing our society, I invite you to reflect on how the relationships and connections in your life are an expression of your values. How are the relationships and connections in your life an expression of your values? And might you be willing to be more intentional about the way your values are expressed? We'll have a musical interlude during your reflection. I attended my first General Assembly 16 years ago. It was 1995, and we gathered that year in Spokane, Washington. Some things haven't changed at all. It's still wonderful to worship with thousands of other Unitarian Universalists. There are still way too many choices in each workshop slot and an overall schedule that could exhaust you, keeping you going from early morning to late at night. But some things have changed. Grab a hymnal if you can. Grab a hymnal, turn to hymn one, then flip back a page. The page should start with "We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association." Now, some of you will recognize these as the principles and purposes of our association, a description of our shared values and the sources we tend to draw on for wisdom. Here's the thing, not all the hymnals are the same. If you look at the bottom list, there's two lists there. So go all the way to the bottom and you see where it says grateful for the religious pluralism and go up. So the bottom, some of you are going to see the words humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. For how many people is that the last words in your hymnal? How many of you have some other words there? Yeah. Those other words have been added. They say spiritual teachings is one of the other sources that we draw on for wisdom. The spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. So why do we have hymnals with two different lists in them? Our hymnal, Singing the Living Tradition, was first published in 1993, just 2 years before my first General Assembly. And it was at my first General Assembly that that list was changed to add that sixth source honoring our earth-centered traditions. So the hymnals that were printed in those first couple years don't list that sixth source, which is now such an important part of how we understand ourselves. Now, these lists are part of the Unitarian Universalist Association bylaws, and they were amended using democratic processes. The use of democratic process is an important part of how we connect, how we come together. The idea that people can use their powers of reason and love and together evolve their institutional religious life makes an important statement about what we believe and how we are in relationship as a faith tradition. Other things have evolved as well. When I first began attending General Assembly, registrants were sent a program book about a month before the assembly. We pored over these and highlighted the choices we might want to make during different workshop times. There's typically like 20, 25 options during any workshop time. And so you did that on the plane. I was usually checking it over. Also at that time, if you wanted to find someone, say a friend from seminary, I would leave a note on a huge set of bulletin boards that had letters of the alphabet, and I would put up a message under her last initial. Hope she would come check it, and then I would check back later under S to see if she had put a note for me and whether or not we could in fact have lunch. When I attended my first General Assembly, I did not yet have a mobile phone. This year, you could get a program book when you arrived in town if you wanted one, but the schedule had been online for several weeks. Also this year, for the first time, there was an app for that. On my smartphone, I could review workshop offerings and mark the ones that looked interesting to me. And then when the time for that workshop came, I could review my personal list and narrow down to my final choice. All the location and other information was at my fingertips. I could easily call or text my friend for lunch dates. And the 26 people, 27 of us from First Unitarian that were present, figured out how to use Twitter to coordinate our activities. Frankly, I was wishing for Twitter for the whole congregation this morning. This year, the wonders of technology allowed off-site delegates sitting in homes and congregations across the country to participate in our business meetings, speaking and voting along with the rest of the delegates. And this year, our democratic process changed our bylaws to drop the use of the expression churches and fellowships to describe the entities that make up our association. Now it is just congregations. What this does is leave open the possibility that new congregations will emerge that do not have brick and mortar locations. Communities of Unitarian Universalists connecting online and spreading our good news in as yet unimagined ways. While I experienced lots of wonderful content of General Assembly this year, what made the biggest impression on me was the evolving process. We are still concerned, deeply concerned, about creating a more peaceful, just, and sustainable future on this planet for all. But the tools and the language that we use to share that message and to do that creating are changing and have changed. And it can be confusing. And I share this with you because this evolution is critical to our understanding of who we are. So, I want to talk to all you immigrants for a minute. That would be all of you who are living in a world that is vastly different from the one you were born into. Think about that for a minute. Are you currently living in a world that is vastly different from the one you were born into? If you are over 40 years old, the answer is probably yes. And if the answer is yes, then you are what is known as a digital immigrant. Now, some of you are working hard to assimilate into the new world you find yourself in. Some of you are simply overwhelmed. Some of you have no real interest in learning the language of this new strange place, language of apps and tweets, YouTubes, Facebooks, and as of 2 weeks ago, Google Plus. Maybe you've learned just enough to be able to use Facebook to see pictures of your grandchildren. Anybody want to admit to that being the reason for being online? Yes, I thought so. As you know, they're not sending U.S. Post pictures anytime soon, right? The challenges we face in our world can cause us frustration, deep frustration. It can make us cranky. It can cause us to judge others harshly. And it might be particularly tempting to judge that other group harshly, those digital natives. These are the folks that were born into the technology age. For digital natives, technology has always been there, and they have always used it. To them, even when you do use it, you use it with an accent. You know, like when you call them up and say, did you get my email? They wouldn't do that. Now, I suspect the digital immigrants aren't too fond of being judged by the digital natives, but you know it goes both ways. Haven't you heard someone say that they have the attention span of a gnat, that they don't have real relationships, that they can't read a whole book and only respond to video? And yet, really, What do you really know about their attention span, their relationships, and their ability to acquire new knowledge? Maybe we could all use with a little less judging all around. It's possible that what we have here is a failure to communicate, not because one of these overgeneralized groups is right and the other one is wrong, but because they're operating out of different paradigms. If our goal is to connect, if what we value is relationship, if we want to build true community, then we will need to spend less time judging each other and more time opening our hearts to one another. There are many ways to learn and know, different ways to relate and connect, a vast array of choices when it comes to how we interact with each other and the world. Would it be possible for us to open our hearts and our minds to wonder at the abundance of options that allow people to connect in more ways? Might that experience of wonder be more rewarding than the experience of banging our heads repeatedly into the walls that we build? I invite you to another time of reflection, an opportunity to consider where in your life less judgment and more wonder might be the key to better communication. I am 52 years old. That should make me a digital immigrant. However, I had what I consider to be the good fortune of living in a home that gave me exposure to the world that I would someday live in. It's sort of like the lucky children today that live in multicultural, bilingual homes. I had a robot when I was 5. I'm not kidding. At 9, I loved to write secret messages in binary code. I wrote my first computer program at 14, and I had a personal computer before they were called personal computers. Sure, to my kids, I still have a slight accent, but I'm not scared of technology either. This in-between place, I believe, makes me particularly well-positioned for one of the things about which I feel passionate. That is helping people see past divisions, reach across divides, build bridges across the chasms that threaten to separate us. We live in a world of change. We can talk about demographic changes and the challenges of outdated and unjust immigration systems. We can talk about technology change and the complexities they present to the perennial challenges of human communication. We live in a world of change. This is not new. It may be happening faster, but it's not new. People have always migrated. Groups have always had to figure out how to deal with other groups of people. Communication has evolved throughout human history. Someone has always predicted that the latest innovation will mean the downfall of civilization. And yet here we are. And I believe there is a path forward if we will allow ourselves to be guided by our values. We believe in freedom. In their freedom, sometimes people will choose to be or believe differently than we do. We believe in the use of reason. It is important to use our reason to check our assumptions and to watch out for the ways that our assumptions can influence our reason. We believe in tolerance. Oh, I know, I aspire to appreciation and affirmation and celebration of others. But that isn't always possible. Some days, with some people, all I'm going to muster up is tolerance, and I want that in my toolkit. And lastly, we believe in love. The open heart allows us to exercise compassion for ourselves and for those around us. In a complicated, often confusing world, it is love that will build bridges and knock down walls. We need to remember that we stand on the side of love together, and then we can face any of the challenges that life puts in our way. We have many tools in our toolbox: freedom, reason, tolerance, love, and more. With these tools, we do not need to be afraid of the changes around us or in us. With these tools, we can step boldly and compassionately toward each other, toward our neighbors, and even toward strangers. This is our challenge today, tomorrow, in the weeks and in the years to come. This is our challenge to be bold and to be compassionate. May it be so. We have everything we need. We have everything we need to love ourselves, everything we need to love our neighbors, everything we need to love the stranger too. In our freedom, may we choose to use both our minds and our hearts, the gift of reason and the gift of love, to heal our world and to make our own hearts whole.